Good morning. You know, this past week, as I've looked out of the windows of the church office and I've seen the middle school, the parking lot as it's filled up this the past few days, and as parents are dropping off their kids and seeing the kids in going into the school, but also outside doing class outside. And I've just been thinking about and praying for a lot of you as you've navigated this really another brand new situation we've never been in before. Some of you students, as it's been a tough week probably going back to school, trying to make sense of the new restrictions and regulations, how to stay safe and yet still how to be in school. Some of you who are parents, how to balance that online or the in-person for your kids, the education, for their future. Some of you who are teachers who have committed yourself to helping these students and these parents, but also you have your own lives and some of you, your own families, your own kids that you're trying to figure out how to mix all that. So just know in all that, you know, I continue to pray for you. We continue, our heart really is with you as we're going into this new phase, this new season, this new kind of fall. You know, when I was a kid, when I was in school, one of the things I remember was a highlight of my school days was when you might have a crush on somebody. And back in those days, if you had a crush, one of the things that you could do is you could find a tree. You'd try and find a big tree like this, and maybe it has an open surface like this, and you'd go and you might carve your name in, and say like Van Plus, and you might put a heart around it or an arrow through it, and it was to just a way of declaring the depth of your love and your undying devotion for this person, because, you know, 7-8 years old, who doesn't know what a depth of love and undying devotion are? But then there were times too that you might find a tree, and probably not one like this one in your own backyard, because that was too obvious. And if you were a little worried about how people might react, like your friends, or maybe that person finds their name carved in a tree, then you might write it in code. So I'd put VT plus whoever that is. And, you know, VT wasn't a very good cover because there weren't a whole lot of V's anywhere on the planet at the time. But you might put it in code so that less people would know. But it was, again, a way that you hoped that the world would hear of this depth of devotion and your heart, how it was in this given to this person. And, you know, today we're going to be talking about devotion. We're going to be talking about what that means. And does it really mean just kind of that butterflies in the stomach that then drive you to write in code and carve into trees and do silly things like that as an expression that you hope the world will pick up on, that you hope that other person will see and then respond to you? Or maybe is there something more? Maybe is there something more to this thing called devotion? That's what we want to look at today. What does it mean to be devoted? Devoted to each other, devoted to God, devoted to his plan and his intentions for this world. So today, in honor of all those students and those teachers and those parents, all those who have gone back to school and have gone back into the classrooms, we're going to have a pop quiz. I know that everybody loves pop quizzes, so that's how we're going to start out. We'll try and keep it straightforward because I know that for many of you, it's been a while since you have been in the classroom. And I'll leave it up to you to accurately keep track of the count of how many you get right. I want you to know at the beginning, there is absolutely no grade or prize that goes along with this, acing this test. But let's start with, there's going to be 5 simple questions. First one is this, math question, 2 + 17 equals what? Okay, second question. Different topic. We're going to cover a variety of subjects here. The capital of Rhode Island is what? Question number 3. The shortest route to Lowe's from where you are presently located is what? Now, I know that's not one that you get normally on a school test, but it's kind of like a bad word problem. Question number 4. My favorite color is what? Now, if you don't get that one right, I really can't help you. But question number 5, last question, real stumper. This is one you're going to have to think about. Why is it that we drive on parkways but park on driveways? Last question. So how'd you do? How'd you do on the quiz? I know you should have gotten at least one right. That's why it was thrown in there. But, you know, usually when we think of school, we think of tests, we think of quizzes. When we think of quizzes, we think of questions. When we think of questions, we think of right or wrong answers. It has to be one or the other. But in some of the questions that I asked you, there may have been multiple right answers. It depends on where you are or who you are or what you like. There may have been some questions. There was a question there. I'm not sure there was a right answer. I don't think there were any right answers. You know, when I was in school, one of the subjects I enjoyed, I really was one of those oddballs that liked math. And one of the things, whether you like math or you don't like math, one of the things that you could always say, you have to admit, you always knew where you stood with math. Because math was one of those topics where you had right and wrong answers. You might even have multiple answers, but you knew that they were either right or they were wrong. So you never had a question where you stood with math. You get into other topics and it gets a little fuzzier. Listen, you get into relationships, and at times, doesn't it feel like relationships are almost like there are these constant quizzes going on, and there aren't always the right answers. I know in my own relationship with Carrie, there are sometimes she might ask me a question. Do you like this dress I have on? How does it make me look? I don't know that there's always a right answer. No. But sometimes in those relationships, in those quizzes that we find ourselves in, those fuzzier ones, there may not be a right answer. There usually is a right response. There's an appropriate response. There's the right thing to say at the time. There's the right way to act towards that person. Always a right response, even if there's not a right answer. And this is true in almost every relationship we're in. This is true even in our relationship with God. Now, last week we talked about, we saw that one of the most important things for us to know about our relationship with God is one that He exists and who He is, His nature, His character, and that the fact that He is always with us. He is always present. So we said, well, who is He? Well, He is God. He is the one who has all power, but what He wanted us to know about Himself is that He is relentlessly compelled towards us with this deep, just deep, deep pool of His love for us. And it compels Him towards us with this kindness that He constantly and abundantly, overflowingly pours out into our lives. And not because we've earned it, not because we deserve it, but because, again, of that love for us. And unendingly, He is patient with us, and He forgives us if we will just turn to Him and ask. And the last thing He said is, and I want you to know, in those areas, I never change. He says that's who He is. Well, then, He says also, I want you to know that I am, but I am always present. I am present in the very fabric of this universe. I'm present with you, always with you, even in the essence of who you are, you will find me. So the question is, knowing that, what is the appropriate response? We may not understand all the answers to the questions that come up about God, but we can know what is the right response that we should have towards Him. Well, last week we were introduced into this practice that the Jewish people have been practicing they've had it as part of their lives for millennia, for thousands of years. It's called the Shema. Now, the Shema is a word that means to listen or to hear. And every morning when they wake up, and every evening before they go to bed, and throughout the day, as they just need another reminder of who God is and that He is present with them, and then to answer this question of what is their response, what should it be, they repeat these words from Deuteronomy 6, 4, and 5. It says, "Hear, Israel, listen, Yahweh, your God, Yahweh, He is the only one. He's the only God. And you will love the Lord your God. You will love Yahweh your God with all your heart, with all your soul, and with all your strength." So in these verses, what we're shown, what we're reminded of is the only appropriate response, the only appropriate response toward God, in response to His love towards us and His kindness towards us and His presence with us, is to love Him. Love Him with all that we are. Love Him with our heart, our soul, our strength. If this were a math test, that is the only right answer. So in this one practice, this Shema, the people of God throughout the millennia have, through thousands of years, have been reminded of who God is, that He is present with them, and what is the right way to respond to that love, to that God who pursues them. You guys, we need the Shema in our lives. We need something that reminds us daily of God's presence and of His love and of our appropriate response, so we know how to go into our days. So I hope that many of you took up my encouragement last week to start making this a practice in your own life. I hope that you have been waking up in the mornings and reminding yourself of who God is and how we respond to Him. I pray that many of you have been going to bed with that and have been using this word, these words of Deuteronomy, to remind yourself during the day as maybe you drift away and you forget, oh yeah, God, He loves me and I love Him. So last week we talked about the first half of that practice, that Shema, who God is, reminding ourselves that He is here with us. But today we're going to look at the second half. We're going to look at what is that response? What does that response look like in our lives? What does it mean to love God with all of our heart, with all of our soul, with all of our strength? Now, often we will use a word to describe that response. And the word we'll use is that word devotion. That word devotion, because we believe that if we truly understood who God is and His compassion and pursuit of us and the way that He's shown us how much He loves us through His sacrifice in Jesus Christ, we believe that we will devote our lives to Him, devote ourselves inside and out, from top to bottom, heart, soul, and strength. But what does that mean? What does it mean to devote ourselves to this God who loves us? In the Old Testament, the word that was used for devote, the Hebrew word for devote, it meant everything from setting things apart for God's use only to things at times that would be placed under a ban, placed under a ban of destruction, so that they would be being removed. And the Hebrew word is the word cherem. Cherem. And cherem is actually, it's a word that we get, a word that many of us know. It's where the same Semitic root is used in the word that we get our word harem from. And the harem is not a group of women that have devoted themselves to a certain ruler, a certain king, a certain powerful husband. Instead, it's seen as this is a group of women who have been set apart for. It's this group of women who have become prohibited from anyone else, even thinking about them, seeing them, interacting with them. This is a group of women who are cherem. Now, when Israel, when they went into the Promised Land, when they conquered many of these conquered cities, many of the items, God said, these are items that are going to be placed under cherem. Under this devotion, so gold and silver and bronze were brought directly to the tabernacle for use there. It was devoted to God. Many of the other items, they were just flat out burned. I mean, if you want to talk about a way to just, you know, the ultimate in prohibition, once something's burned, you can't. No one else can use it. It's set apart. It's under cherem. In the worship of God in Israel. I found it interesting as I was studying in the Old Testament several years ago, and there's this recipe for the incense that was used in the temple, and you use certain amounts of very specific items, and you mix them in a certain way. It's this very specific kind of combination of these things. And these items, this recipe became cherem. It was set apart so that God said, I don't want this type of incense. I don't want this incense used anywhere else but the temple. So that this recipe became cherem. And as a result, then even the smell of that incense burning, that incense that was made with these specific items in this specific way, with this specific mixture, that very particular smell was cherem. It was set apart to God. It was dedicated. It was devoted to God and for His use in His temple only. That's cherem. So what does it mean for us to be cherem, us to be devoted to God? Well, I think Paul gives us a good picture of the attitude, the heart attitude of cherem when he writes in Philippians 3, 7 and 8. He says, whatever things were gained to me, I have counted those things loss for the sake of Christ. And more than that, I count all things to be loss in view of the surpassing knowledge, the surpassing value of knowing Christ Jesus, my Lord, for whom I have suffered the loss of all things and count them but rubbish, trash, garbage, waste, so that I might gain Christ. That is cherem. That's setting our affections apart. For that, if we're going to become cherem, devoted to God and love Him with all that we are, everything else has to become worthless, rubbish, trash in our eyes, fit for the garbage heap. In light of, in comparison to knowing Him and growing more and more aware of His presence and His guidance in our lives. So how are we doing with that? How are we doing with devoting, setting apart our affections for God only? In Matthew 6:24, Jesus is teaching His disciples how to make themselves, how to put themselves under cherem in terms of the way that they live out their daily lives. This is righteousness, living rightly before God. And He says much the same thing. He said, no one can serve two masters. Either he will hate the one and love the other, or he will be devoted to the one and despise the other. You cannot serve God and the things that profit you in this world. You can't serve both. You have to, you have to cherem, put yourself under cherem for God. Be devoted to Him. Later He got even more direct. He dug even deeper. And He says in Matthew 16, 24 and 25, He says, those who wish to follow Me, they must deny even themselves. They must take up the cross as if they are on their way to be crucified and to be done away with and follow Me. He took up His cross. For whoever wishes to save their own life will lose it. And whoever loses their own life for My sake will save it. For what profit is there if a person gains the whole world but forfeits their own soul? That's cherem. That's devotion. We become like those who are dead to this world. All of our affections are set aside. All of our we become dead to even our own desires for the things of this world. That's really what Romans 12, 1 and 2 is talking about when it says that we become like living sacrifices set apart for God, walking around under cherem, under this ban of destruction, under this prohibition, ruined for anything but the love of God, our love for God and His love for us and His love working through us. That's cherem. That is devotion. You know, another picture in the Hebrew language of cherem is found in some of the other words that are related to this word. In their root, the word for chisel is related to devotion. It's a tool that they saw it as a tool that sharply and relentlessly, unforgivingly digs in and separates those things that are meant to stay and those things that are waste. And it chisels them off. It is a tool of cherem. And so it engraves, and all that is left is the sculpture, is the engraving, so that it might be clear, that it might be set apart for that one use. You know, once you carve a statue, you can't use that stone, that marble, that granite, you can't use it for anything else. You can't use it for tiling your bathroom, say. You can't use it. It's been shaped for one purpose and one purpose only. And so what you have left is you have this sculpture, this engraving, and then you have the pile of waste that is fit only for the trash heap. It's a picture of harem. The chisel is the thing that divides between the two. Another is the word for this violent anger or sharp, the sword that goes out and it divides, it cuts off, it lays waste anything that stands in the way of the plans that are being made or prosperity or the peace of a people. And everything else is devoted to destruction to make way for that which is right, that which is desired. Again, it is a tool of cherem. You know, in these words, we see this other aspect of harem, the other aspect of devotion that ties in with that first idea, is that we also sometimes we have this, there's this very sometimes painful work that needs to be done. This division that happens in our heart, where God just lays waste to anything that stands in the way of His purposes, His work in our lives. He chisels it away. He scrapes it away. Maybe it's that bitterness that we're hanging on to, and God is chiseling, doing the work of cherem. Maybe it's that addiction that we have, and whether it's a physical addiction or whether it's an addiction of our affections towards something that we know draws us away from God and away from His purposes. Maybe it's just an anger or a hatred within us that just keeps us from loving others the way that God has called us to. Maybe it's an affection for luxury and for nice things in a way that sets us apart from others and makes us feel separated from and superior to them instead of compelling us towards them like God is compelled towards us. And God's work of chiseling, cherem, devoting, making us devoted, doing that work of devoting our hearts towards Him. So how are we doing with that? How are we doing in that work? Is that our prayer daily, that God, you might chisel away and lay waste everything that stands in the way of your work in me? So how do we do that work? How do we do that hard work of devotion? What does it take to grow in our love for God in our heart and soul and strength on a daily and our everyday life? Well, the first thing I think we need to do is we need that practice of reminding ourselves that's the process that we're in the midst of. We're building skills, we're building practices into our lives that God will use to shape us to be more like Christ. And the first is just that practice, that Shema, that reminder of waking up in the morning and just saying, you know what, God is the only one. Waking up with the words of Deuteronomy 6, 4 and 5. God is the only God, and this is who He is, and is the only appropriate response is cherem, is devotion to Him. It's to love Him and Him alone. Second thing we need to do is we need to do that hard work of working that attitude into every layer of our lives. That's what Deuteronomy 4:5 is all about. Loving the Lord with our heart, our soul, and our strength. Now, in the Hebrew thinking, the heart is everything that's interior to us, everything that can't be seen. It's our affections, it's our decisions, it's our mind, our will, our emotions, it's our personality, everything about us that makes us us. How do we work cherem into that, into our heart, so that every decision is made out of devotion to Christ? Every decision, you know, and that can be hard, because we don't like giving up control of ourselves. We don't like dedicating every word, every thought. But that's what cherem is. That's what we see in Jesus. Jesus, where He prays, He faces the toughest decision as a human being that He could have made. And He finally ends His prayer with, "But not my will, but yours be done." That's cherem. That's a tough prayer to pray. But that's when everything interior, everything that cannot be seen, but that is us, becomes aligned with the work and the will and the purposes of God. You know, on the opposite side of that is the strength. And so we, the heart, the soul, and the strength. And, you know, in the Hebrew thinking, the first part, the last part, those aren't the important one. The middle one is the important. So the first one is heart. The last one is strength. And strength is all that we do, all that we say, all that people do see in our lives. Is that charem? Is that given to God? Can people watch our lives and listen to our words, see what we give ourselves to, and know, you know what, that is someone who is dedicated to God, who is devoted, who is set apart, that is prohibited from any other use but God in His work? Do we show that kind of love towards others in our lives so that they don't see us? They really see the work of God coming through us. They see someone whose life is aligned with God, whose interior is aligned. But then the key becomes that middle piece, that soul. In the Hebrew thinking, the word soul, it was life itself. It's that breath of life that had been given to us by God in the beginning. But it's that soul, that life, our very essence, our very being. Everything is tied together by the soul. I mean, all that we are on the inside, all that we are on the outside finds its starting point, finds its reality in our being. So is our very being, our very essence, the core of who we are, is it charem? Have we given ourselves wholly to God? Every breath that we take, is our life, our very life, available to lay down for Him, for His purposes, for His plans, for His will, that His will might be done on earth as it is in heaven? That's charem. Again, that's what we see in Jesus, isn't it? We see Him coming, and in Philippians 2, it says, you know, He was God Himself. But He didn't see that as something to be clung on to, but rather because of this devotion, this dedication, even being God Himself, God the Son, because of His devotion to that plan, that love, that purpose, that character of God, He even laid down His own life that God's will might be done, that God's purposes might be accomplished for us. Again, the grace of God, we didn't deserve it, we didn't earn it, and yet He gave it. And finally, charem, the practice of charem. So we need to be practicing, reminding ourselves every day. We need to be doing the work of pushing it in deep. But then finally, charem also is keeping at it. You know, in the New Testament, the Greek word for devotion is a word that literally means it's something along the lines of to persistently push your way back into close proximity with a person or a thing. That's devotion to that person. You're constantly pushing in as close as you can. If you get pushed away, you push in again. That's what devotion does. Devotion doesn't give up. It is relentless. You know, so God starts chiseling away at our lives, and it causes pain, and it makes us wonder about it. How good is this God anyway? And we kind of drift away. Devotion is what drives us back. We push in closer. Maybe there are those times that we are appearing, because of the will and the work of God in our lives, we appear to be losing more than we're gaining, and it drives us away. We drift off wondering, is this worthwhile? But devotion is what drives us back. The devotion of our very, the essence of who we are, the devotion of all that we do, the devotion of all that we think and decide, and all that interior that goes on. So we push back. We push back to get closer and closer and closer. Maybe it is that we feel alone at times, or we feel anxious, especially in times like this, where so much is changing and so much is unknown, and we don't know, and we're hearing voices in our head and in our minds and asking, you know, is God even with us? Is He really here with us? Does He even care about us? Does He care about me? We drift off. We find ourselves separated further. But rather than feeling guilty and feeling like we're a failure and feeling like it's all lost, you know what devotion does? You know what charem does? Charem drives back again and again and again, the persistently pushing our way back in to close proximity with God. Persistently pushing our way back, knowing that He is forgiven, knowing that He has opened the way, knowing that He has paid the price for us, persistently pushing back in close. That's
harem.
That's devotion. Devotion is relentless because everything else is rubbish. There's nothing else worth our time. There's nothing else worth our attention. There is no one else that has any right, that the right answer is to give ourselves wholly to them. Only God. God is the only God, the only one worth giving ourselves to. It doesn't matter what we feel. It doesn't matter what we think, the voices that we're hearing on our heads. It doesn't matter what we see in this world. We know the truth that God is the only one, and that He has given Himself without reservation to us, and that the only right response, the only correct, appropriate response is cherem, is devotion, devotion to Him. So hear this, O people of God. Yahweh, the Lord, your God, Yahweh, He is the only one. He's the only God. He's the only one worthy of cherem. So love Him. Love Yahweh, your God, with all your heart, with all your soul, with all your strength. You know, I hope that we will continue to be building these practices in our lives. I hope that you will take this Shema and weave it into the fabric of your day, in the morning, into the evening, into the middle of your day. So that constantly you will be doing this work of cherem. That we will be asking the question, we will be knowing who is our God. But then because of who our God is, what is the only appropriate response to that God, to His love, to His presence constantly with us? Begin practicing that each day. Begin making that a part of your life, because this is a practice that will shape us into the amazing people, that amazing being that God designed us, designed you to be. And remember, in all of it, it's going to take time. It's going to take persistence. So don't give up. Don't give up now, because great things always take time. Father, thank you for your plans. Thank you for your purposes. And thank you for your amazing love and kindness towards us. The grace that is available in Christ. The forgiveness that is available for all of our sins. Because of your devotion to us, your giving of yourself and making us your one object, the one object of your affection. Father, I pray that we would learn and your Spirit would teach us and chisel away at us until nothing is left of us but devotion to you. That we will find that inside of us is this being, made in the image of God, made to reflect the very nature, the character, the love of God. And through that, others might see you in us. Not that they'd be drawn to us, but through us they would be drawn to you. Because you alone are the one who satisfies all of our longings. You alone are the one who meets all of our needs. You are the one alone who can fill us with peace and with joy, with contentment, with satisfaction in this life. So, Father, work in us the work of cherem, the work of devotion, that we might truly be yours, yours and yours alone. Carve it on every tree. Shout it from every mountaintop. You have made it known that you love us. Let our voices shout out that we love you with all of our heart, with all of our soul, with all of our strength. In Jesus' name, amen.